File 10.
This probing into books and newspapers and studying the teachings of social democracy reawakened my love for my own people. And thus, what at first seemed an impassable chasm became the occasion of a closer affection. Having once understood the working of the colossal system for poisoning the popular mind, only a fool could blame the victims of it. During the years that followed, I became more independent, and as I did so, I became better able to understand the inner cause of the success achieved by this social democratic gospel. I now realized the meaning and purpose of those brutal orders which prohibited the reading of all books and newspapers that were not read, and at the same time demanded that only the read meetings should be attended. In the clear light of brutal reality, I was able to see what must have been the inevitable consequences of that intolerant teaching. The psyche of the broad masses is accessible only to what is strong and uncompromising. Like a woman whose inner sensibilities are not so much under the sway of abstract reasoning, but are always subject to the influence of a vague emotional longing for the strength that completes her being, and who would rather bow to the strong man than dominate the weakling. In like manner, the masses of the people prefer the ruler to the suppliant, and are filled with a stronger sense of mental security by a teaching that brooks no rival than by a teaching which offers them a liberal choice. They have very little idea of how to make such a choice, and thus they are prone to feel that they have been abandoned. They feel very little shame at being terrorized intellectually, and they're scarcely conscious of the fact that their freedom as human beings is impudently abused, and thus they have not the slightest suspicion of the intrinsic fallacy of the whole doctrine. They see only the ruthless force and brutality of its determined utterances, to which they always submit. If social democracy should be opposed by a more truthful teaching, then even, though the struggle be of the bitterest kind, this truthful teaching will finally prevail, provided it be enforced with equal ruthlessness. Within less than 2 years, I had gained a clear understanding of social democracy in its teaching and the technique of its operations. I recognized the infamy of that technique whereby the movement carried on a campaign of mental terrorism against the bourgeoisie, who are neither morally nor spiritually equipped to withstand such attacks. The tactics of social democracy consisted in opening, at a given signal, a veritable drumfire of lies and calumnies against the man whom they believed to be the most redoubtable of their adversaries, until the nerves of the latter gave way, and they sacrificed the man who was attacked, simply in the hope of being allowed to live in peace. But the hope proved always to be a foolish one, for they were never left in peace. The same tactics are repeated again and again, until fear of these mad dogs exercises, through suggestion, a paralyzing effect on their victims. Through its own experience, social democracy learned the value of strength, and for that reason it attacks mostly those in whom it scents stuff of the more stalwart kind, which is indeed a very rare possession. On the other hand, It praises every weakling amongst its adversaries, more or less cautiously, according to the measure of his material qualities known or presumed. They have less fear of a man of genius who lacks willpower than of a vigorous character with mediocre intelligence, and at the same time they highly commend those who are devoid of intelligence and willpower. The Social Democrats know how to create the impression that they alone are protectors of peace. In this way, acting very circumspectly, but never losing sight of their ultimate goal, they conquer one position after another, at one time by methods of quiet intimidation, and at another time by sheer daylight robbery, employing these latter tactics at those moments when public attention is turned towards other matters from which it does not wish to be diverted, or when the public considers an incident too trivial to create a scandal about it, and thus provoke the anger of a malignant opponent. These tactics are based on an accurate estimation of human frailties, and must lead to success with almost mathematical certainty, unless the other side also learns how to fight poison gas with poison gas. The weaker natures must be told that here is a case of to be or not to be. I also came to understand that physical intimidation has its significance for the mass as well as for the individual. Here again, the socialists had calculated accurately on the psychological effect. Intimidation in workshops and in factories, in assembly halls and at mass demonstrations, will always meet with success, so long as it does not have to encounter the same kind of terror in a stronger form. Then, of course, the party will raise a horrified outcry, yelling blue murder and appealing to the authority of the state, which they have just repudiated. In doing this, their aim generally is to add to the general confusion, so that they may have a better opportunity of reaching their own goal unobserved. Their idea is to find among the higher government officials some bovine creature who, in the stupid hope that he may win the good graces of these awe-inspiring opponents, so that they may remember him in case of future eventualities, will help them now to break all those who may oppose this world pest. The impression which such successful tactics make on the minds of the broad masses, whether they be adherents or opponents, can be estimated only by one who knows the popular mind, not from books, but from practical life. For the successes which are thus obtained are taken by the adherents of social democracy as a triumphant symbol of the righteousness of their own cause. On the other hand, the beaten opponent very often loses faith in the effectiveness of any further resistance. The more I understand the methods of physical intimidation that were employed, the more sympathy I had for the multitudes that had succumbed to it. I am thankful now for the ordeal which I had to go through at that time, for it was the means of bringing me to think kindly again of my own people, inasmuch as the experience enabled me to distinguish between the false leaders and the victims who have been led astray. We must look upon the latter simply as victims. I have just now tried to depict a few traits which express the mentality of those on the lowest rung of the social ladder, but my picture would be disproportionate if I do not add that amid the social depths I still found light, for I experienced a rare spirit of self-sacrifice and loyal comradeship among those men, who demanded little from life, and were content amid their modest surroundings. This was true especially of the older generation of workmen, and although these qualities were disappearing more and more in the younger generation, owing to the all-pervading influence of the big city, yet among the younger generation also there were many who were sound of the core and who were able to maintain themselves uncontaminated amid the sordid surroundings of their everyday existence. If these men, who in many cases meant well and were upright in themselves, gave the support to the political activities carried on by the common enemies of our people, that was because those decent workpeople did not and could not grasp the downright infamy of the doctrines taught by the socialist agitators. Furthermore, it was because no other section of the community bothered itself about the lot of the working classes. Finally, the social conditions became such that men who otherwise would have acted differently were forced to submit to them, even though unwillingly at first. A day came when poverty gained the upper hand and drove those workmen into the social democratic ranks. On innumerable occasions, the bourgeoisie took a definite stand against even the most legitimate human demands of the working classes. That conduct was ill-judged, and indeed immoral, and could bring no gain whatsoever to the bourgeois class. The result was that the honest workman abandoned the original concept of the trades union and was dragged into politics. There were millions and millions of workmen who began by being hostile to the Social Democratic Party, but their defences were repeatedly stormed, and finally they had to surrender. Yet this defeat was due to the stupidity of the bourgeois parties, who had opposed every social demand put forward by the working classes. The short-sighted refusal to make an effort towards improving labour conditions, the refusal to accept measures which would ensure the workmen in case of accidents in the factories, the refusal to forbid child labour, the refusal to consider protective measures for female workers, especially expectant mothers, all this was of assistance to the social democratic leaders, who were thankful for every opportunity which they could exploit for forcing the masses into their net. Our bourgeois parties can never repair the damage that resulted from the mistake they then made, for they sowed the seeds of hatred when they opposed all efforts at social reform. And thus they gave, at least apparent grounds, to justify the claim put forward by the Social Democrats, namely, that they alone stand up for the interests of the working class. And this became the principal ground for the moral justification of the actual existence of the trades unions, so that the labour organisation became, from that time onwards, the chief political recruiting ground to swell the ranks of the Social Democratic Party. While thus studying the social conditions around me, I was forced, whether I liked it or not, to decide on the attitude I should take towards the trades unions. Because I looked on them as inseparable from the Social Democratic Party, my decision was hasty and mistaken. I repudiated them as a matter of course, but on this essential question also fate intervened and gave me a lesson, with the result that I changed the opinion which I had first formed. When I was 20 years old, I had learned to distinguish between the trades union as a means of defending the social rights of the employees and fighting for better living conditions for them, and, on the other hand, the trades union as a political instrument used by the party and the class struggle. The Social Democrats understood the enormous importance of the trades union movement. They appropriated it as an instrument and used it with success, while the bourgeois parties failed to understand it and thus lost their political prestige. They thought that their own arrogant veto would arrest the logical development of the movement and force it into an illogical position. But it is absurd and also untrue to say that the trades union movement is in itself hostile to the nation. The opposite is the more correct view. If the activities of the trades union are directed towards improving the conditions of a class, and succeed in doing so, such activities are not against the fatherland or the state, but are, in the truest sense of the word, national. In that way, the trades union organization helps to create the social conditions which are indispensable in a general system of national education. It deserves high recognition when it destroys the psychological and physical germs of social disease, and thus fosters the general welfare of the nation. It is superfluous to ask whether the trades union is indispensable.